Welcome, everyone, to the Apocalary Podcast. I'm Steve. He's Larry. We're back. We're better than ever. Apparently, I say too many nice things about the guy, but look, he is Reverend Dr. Lawrence Van Beek, folks. I am not Reverend.
That is right.
So there's a distinction there. It's a distinction with a difference, by the way, too. Very good to see you, my friend.
And it's great to be here, Stephen.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we're still saying that by the end of this. Who knows? It is a podcast, after all. Folks, this week we're talking about Revelation 14. Larry, why don't you give us an introduction to Revelation 14 and why this is such an important chapter?
This chapter is going to talk about, it's actually a total distinction from what just happened in 13. That's how it's going to start. And then he's going to be talking about three different messages from the angels. And coming with the eternal gospel coming. And then something that sounds like a rapture, oddly enough. Ooh. And then after that, there's going to be a massive war with blood to the horses' bridles, which our literal friends will struggle with.
Yeah.
But the rest of us that are a bit more symbolic, we'll be okay.
Yeah.
So it's a tremendous passage, and well worth the effort of fighting your way through it.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're going to make them fight their way through it because that's our role.
Unless they shut us off and then they won't have to.
Yeah. And don't be afraid to yell at me tonight either, because we need all the volume you can give me, my friend.
Okay. I'll try to be loud.
Yes, that's right. We're doing it like we are, we're before a crowd in, I don't know where I'm going with what I'm about to say, so I'm going to stop myself lest I say something stupid. Wow, that was close, folks. That was really close. All right, bud, so I'll read that first section. So, folks, again, we're in Revelation 14. I happen to have the New International Version up. How did I do that to myself? Oh, forgive me. Let's go and let's find that right version that we want. Not the Bulgarian one. That would be awfully fun, though. How do you feel about doing this in the Bulgarian version?
No? I could do it. As long as it's in English.
Yeah.
Do they speak English in Bulgaria?
Oh, I like what you did there. So we're a little disjointed tonight, folks, and that's not anyone's fault, but we're just having fun. All right, folks, again, Revelation 14, the English Standard Version. I'm going to start verse 1, I'm going to read down to the end of verse 5. And then I looked, and behold, on Mount Zion stood the Lamb, and with him 144,000 who had his name and his father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven like the roar of many waters and like the sound of loud thunder. The voice I heard was like the sound of harpists playing on their harps. And they were singing a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and before the elders. No one could learn that song except the 144,000 who had been redeemed from the earth. These had not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins. It is these who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These have been redeemed from mankind as first fruits, for God and the Lamb. And in their mouth no lie was found. They are blameless. So, Lair, it seems like they really want us to get this whole 144,000 thing down.
Yeah, we keep working away at this. But notice what he's done. In chapter 13, he was talking about you need to, if you want to buy and sell, you have to worship the beast.
Right.
And in order to worship the beast, you have to receive a mark on your right hand or on your forehead, right? And we had talked about, you know, all the technological possibilities, but also the spiritual reality of who are you going to serve, you know, who are you going to worship. And remember, there were people from every, there were people and tribes and languages, nations and tribes and languages, right? From people from all of those things were going to receive the mark of the beast. And then we talked about the reality of that. But when you get to chapter 14, he does the exact opposite then. And he says, and there on Mount Zion was the Lamb, and with him the 144,000. And if you go back to chapter 7, the 144,000 were from every tribe and nation and language and tongue, right? Mm-hmm. And here they are again. And this 100, and remember we said that's, they could be the Jewish evangelists or it could be Israel,
right.
But I really think it's the church. Well, this time it's a little bit clearer that this is the church or tribulation saints, if you think the church is gone, but these are the Christians, right? And where the other ones receive the mark of the beast, these guys receive, I'm seeing you yawn there, Steve.
I'm not yawning.
These ones receive, they're receiving the mark of the Father on their forehead. Okay. So you see the contrast? Chapter 13 is the mark of the beast. And many times when people talk about 13, they don't get beyond that to 14 to talk about those who have the Father's name written on their forehead.
Well, like you said, always, right? You know, you have to read this book in totality. You can't just pick and choose and pull pieces out because you read it in one sitting. That makes sense, right?
That's right. And if you try to do direct relationships, you know, between this equals this and this equals that, it'll mess you up every time. It'll embarrass you every time.
Yeah.
But if you look at it this way, now we've got the church, and they are serving the God. They're serving the God. They're serving God, and they've got His name on their forehead.
Yeah.
And I heard a voice from heaven, like the roar of many waters, and like the sound of thunder. And that's the presence of God, right?
The presence of God, thunder and lightning. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And the voice was like harpists playing their harps. You can do what you want with that. I've never been a fan of harps. Yeah. So it's very difficult for me to really enjoy what he's saying. But what are they doing with this?
Supposedly soothing. I don't know. Some people, it's like chalk, you know, nails on a chalkboard. But
when I was quite a bit younger and I was first in the ministry, I had to go to a banquet for Trinity Western University, and it was a Western theme, and the guy was playing Western music on a harp. So that didn't work for me.
Merle Haggard doesn't work on a harp, does he?
Like, no. But this is going to be better because they're going to sing a new song before the throne and before the four living creatures and before the elders. So he takes you, he says you're going to be marked with God's mark, and he takes it right back to heaven and shows you again what's going on in heaven, which he's done about three times now, right?
Is there any relevance there that he keeps pointing back to the throne too? Like he keeps always saying this is always around the throne, that the throne is kind of the center. Is that just?
Yeah, and of course the throne of God, and throne isn't mentioned that often in scripture, but it's mentioned many times in the book of Revelation.
Yeah, okay.
And it's always taking you back to God is on his throne and Jesus is with God, right? Remember that chapter 4 and 5?
Yeah.
And this is the promise. What is the promise for a persecuted church? The promise is you're going to be with God. Right. Who's the master of the universe?
Yeah.
God is the master of the universe. Of course, now you have to say multiverse.
Yeah.
Jewish people said master of the universe.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So no one could learn the song except the 144,000 who redeemed. So who knows the song of God? Only God's people.
Yeah.
Right? These are those, now this gets a little more difficult for most of us. These are those who have not defiled themselves with women, for they are virgins.
Yeah.
It is these that follow the Lamb. And people really struggle with this, did not defile themselves with women.
Yeah.
But the idea behind it, of course, is the only way we can do this, unless we actually think that you're not supposed to get married as a Christian. And you know, there are Christian groups. I was going to say sects. But there are Christian groups that don't believe you should get married.
Right.
Right. And they think that the only way that the church grows then is through conversion, of course.
Right.
And so there are people that believe that. And there are people that believe also that priests shouldn't get married, right? And but most of us don't think that this is what this is talking about.
Right.
This is talking just about the purity of a Christian, right? No problem with getting married and all that kind of stuff. This is the life of God, God's children. And we follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Mm. And now for us, that sounds almost like a nursery rhyme, doesn't it?
Yes, yes.
To follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And we're the first fruits of the Lamb. You know, Mary had a little lamb.
Yeah.
you know, but this is, it would not be taken that way by their audience. It would be a very serious thing about defiling yourself with women, not following the ways of the world, and following Jesus wherever he goes. Right?
Is it being that offering too? Is it, you know, that first fruits kind of brings that tithe, that offering sort of concept back in too, right?
Yeah, and these ones that are redeemed from the earth, these persecuted Christians that are being killed for their faith, that's who he's talking to, right? The persecuted Christians that are going to die for their faith, they're the first fruits of God's new world. They're the ones that are coming in as the first fruits.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, and which is all tied to the Jewish offering system.
Yeah.
It's incredibly powerful for them.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're living in a world where your total ability to earn money, to earn a living, has been curtailed because of your faith.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, but look what you're getting.
Yeah.
The whole thing is yours.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, and constantly remind him, God is still on his throne.
God's on the throne.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Larry. By the way, folks, we had a great joke for the 144,000. Larry didn't even set me up for it. So anyway. and we're just going to leave you wondering what that joke was. There, take that.
There you are. Carry on.
No, Larry, that was awesome. That was, especially to contrast that with 13, to say, this is the mark of the beast. But now we see the mark of God on these folks, on their foreheads, and these are the elect and the chosen. Okay, moving along here, folks. Now we'll turn our attention to 6 through 13, and I'll pick it up at verse 6 here. And then I saw another angel flying directly overhead, with an eternal gospel to proclaim to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation and tribe and language and people. And he said with a loud voice, "Fear God and give him glory, for the hour of his judgment has come. And worship him who made heaven and earth, the sea and the springs of water." Another angel, a second, followed, saying, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great, she who made all the nations drink the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality." And another angel, a third, followed them, saying in a loud voice, "If anyone worships the beast and its image and receives the mark on his forehead or on his hand, he will also drink the wine of God's wrath, poured full strength into the cup of his anger. And he will be tormented with fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and in the presence of the Lamb. And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever. They will have no rest, day or night, these worshippers of the beast in its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name." Here is the call for the endurance of the saints, those who keep the commandments of God and their faith in Jesus. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, "Write this, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Blessed indeed," said the Spirit, "that they may rest from their labors and follow their deeds, and for their deeds that follow them." Wow.
Okay. That's a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot, but you have to read that section together, don't you? Because you've got to capture those three angels together.
Yes, yeah. And so look what the angels are doing. The first one is bringing the eternal gospel. Right, the gospel we preach to all the nations, and then the end shall come. If you go back to, you know, Matthew 24 or Mark 13, this is picking up on those kind of ideas. The Joel passage about the end of time. Well, when does the end come? It comes after the gospel is preached. Give God glory, for his hour of judgment has come. Worship him. Right. So what do you do when God's judgment comes? Give him glory.
Yeah.
And this is again an author that's trying to say, there are some terrible things coming. How could gracious God do such terrible things, right? Remember before he said, "You are just, O Lord, in your judgments."
Yeah.
And in this time he says, give him glory, right? The gospel's going to be preached, and these things are going to happen on the earth. And God has not changed.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's still calling out to me. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was going to say he's still calling the people on the earth, right?
Still calling them to salvation. Calling them to salvation. Who is he? He's the one who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and the springs of water. He made it all.
Yeah.
Right? In other places, he'll say he made stuff under the earth. Like, he's just trying to pick up everything. All belongs to God.
Yep.
The second angel comes and he says, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She made all the nations drink the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality." Now, Babylon is mentioned here. I think this is the first time in Revelation that Babylon's mentioned, but he will mention this again in the chapters to come. Like, he'll go very, very much into this whole idea of Babylon. And Babylon, it actually sat on, someone told me once that it sat on the same hills, just like Rome did. And there's always a relationship in their minds between Babylon and Rome. Now, Babylon was the great power, right? He was the head of Daniel's statue. And the other nations weren't quite as impressive as Babylon, as powerful as they were. Babylon was the great one. And Babylon is the one that Rome is compared to.
Okay.
So now we're thinking we might be talking about Rome. And this always pushes me back into a preterist view that John had something very, very immediate that he was telling his people about. Now, I had a teacher in college that talked about Babylon is Iran, right? That's modern day Iran. And he talked about it being built on the oil sands and everything. And when they talk later on about it burning in an hour, that this could actually happen. But John is talking about this maddening wine of their sexual immorality. He's using things that are images of evil to the first century church, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of sexual immorality, the idea of drunkenness, all of this. Drinking, I don't know, was a problem, but drunkenness certainly was.
Right.
And he's saying Babylon is forcing her wealth and her riches on everybody. Mm. And you remember in the last chapter we said, you know, back in the 90s, the churches, the Christians around the world kind of saw United States the way these guys are seeing Babylon, the way these guys are seeing Rome.
Right.
I don't know who they're going to see in our near future, you know.
Right.
Like, are they going to, is the United States going to hold on to their power? Or are they going to lose it? I don't know.
Right.
I know that, I hope they maintain their power, because as Canadians, we really rely on that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We're quite happy to have our powerful neighbor beside us.
We are. And, you know, we're just a little above them. And so.
Yeah.
So there you go. So that's the whole idea of Babylon, right? So that's the second nation saying that Babylon's going to fall, right? Rome's going to fall. Some people would say it's not a direct relationship to Rome. This is civilized mankind is going to fall. So the power of humanity is going to be destroyed.
Yes.
The third angel then says, and this again, remember we said in chapter 13, they said you have to worship the beast and receive its mark, and people from every nation, tribe, and tongue will worship this beast. So everybody's going to be worshiping the beast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this one says now, if you worship the beast or receive the mark, then you're going to drink the wine of God's wrath. And he's going to be, in just a moment, he's going to be talking about some strong destruction that's going to happen from that. But here he'll say that they're going to be tormented in fire and sulfur in the presence of the holy angels, and the smoke of the torment goes up forever. So what happens if you receive the mark of the beast?
Exit stage left.
Exit stage left, and really... you know, they don't talk about hell as much anymore as they used to.
Right.
There's that feeling that there is no such thing as hell, or I have friends that believe in a thing called annihilation, that nobody goes to hell, you're just annihilated. And some believe in universal salvation, that in the end everybody gets to be with God.
Sure.
But John didn't seem to have a problem with hell.
No, I was going to say, apparently this torment goes up forever.
Yeah, and it's the whole image of Gehenna, right? The whole smoking thing. That, remember the mountain on the one area in the Valley of Hinnon where they burn their garbage, and they use that as an example of torment and exclusion from God.
Yeah.
Because nobody went there. It was their garbage, right? And they burned it to get rid of it.
Yep.
And so the smoke went up forever. And that's what he's talking about. He's saying, if you don't serve God, this is the result. Remember, we've been saying that through this whole book. You're either going to serve God and die for your faith, if you're these guys, or you're not going to serve God, and in so many different ways, you're going to wish you could die.
Yeah.
Rather than face God.
Yeah. It's almost like you're choosing early death and being with God, or torment forever and not being.
Or torment and permanent death. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and if you don't like that, then you could, you know, do something else with it. But I think that's the image that John is going for here.
Yep. Yep.
And then he says, this calls for patient endurance on the part of the saints. Mm-hmm. What is the patient endurance? The patient endurance for these guys is to carry on in the face of persecution.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Which is what, like you said all the time, that's what this book is about. Let me give you hope. This is why you need to keep pressing on towards the goal.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's other places that talk about, you know, believers, you know, gaining wealth and believers gaining, you know, physical health and persecution going all around you but never coming upon you. You know, like the song.
Yeah.
You know? Was that 1,000 fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come nigh unto you.
Yeah.
Well, those are great verses, but that's not for this audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
This audience has to live for God in the face of certain death, right?
Yeah. It is funny that we claim those Psalms a lot more than we claim this.
I prefer those too. I always said, remember that one that said, you know, I'd rather go to Club Med and show how I can be an incredibly wealthy, healthy person and not be materialistic. but that's not the lot for everybody. And even today, because it's so tough for us because we're living in Canada.
Right.
And according to a great part of the world, you know, we won the lottery by our birth in this country.
Yeah.
And there is the opportunity for wealth. And I even had someone say, even our poorest people here aren't as bad off as people in other countries. And I would never say that because of, you know, where I live and who I work with. But it is a scary thing. Now my wife would tell you, We suffer in different ways in Canada than they do in other places.
Oh, sure, sure, yeah. Sure, sure. But I saw some stat today that said some CEO of a clothing company, that they have their clothes produced in Bangladesh, that CEO only has to work 4 days to make what that worker in Bangladesh makes in their lifetime.
Wow. Eh?
Yeah, it's just such a scary sort of way to put it.
Yeah. And isn't in the first week of the year, the top CEOs make more than we do in a year?
Yeah.
In the first 4 hours of the year. Is it 4 hours or 4 days?
I think
for me it's 4 days. For you it's 4 hours.
Yeah. yes, the lucrative world of higher education. Strikes again. Yes, that's why
I work for a government school.
Yeah, well, that's why we work in higher ed, folks. We're in it for the money. look at us. Look at the way we're dressed, even that says that. Yeah. Okay, cool. Anything more to say about that, Larry? Do you want me to press on?
Let's finish this one off. And this last part is just glorious, actually.
Yeah. So starting at verse 14, folks, let's go right down to the very end. And then I looked, and behold, a white cloud, and seated on the cloud, one like a son of man, with a golden crown on his head, and a sharp sickle in his hand. And another angel came out of the temple, calling with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, put in your sickle, and reap, for the hour to reap is come, for the harvest of the earth is fully ripe. And he who sat on the cloud swung his sickle across the earth, and the earth was reaped. And another angel came out of the temple in heaven, and he too had a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar, the angel who had authority over the fire, and he called out with a loud voice to the one who had a sharp sickle, put in your sickle, and gather the clusters from the wine of the earth, for the grapes are ripe. So the angel swung a sickle across the earth and gathered the grape harvest of the earth and threw it into the great winepress that is the wrath of God. And the winepress was trodden outside the city, and blood flowed from the winepress as high as a horse's bridle for 1,600 stadia.
Okay. So this part here, verse 14 to 16, is the harvest of the earth. And, you know, you almost hate to say it, but there are people that see a rapture here as well. Mm. So remember, there's some that saw the rapture of the church in chapter 4, right? Just the beginning of chapter 4 when they go to heaven. Some saw the rapture of the church in 11:15, right?
Okay.
Some saw the rapture of the church just a little bit later on as well in 11, but right in that area. Remember I said, if I was a rapture person, that 11 made a lot of sense to me, you know, with the cloud and the voice saying, come up here.
Okay.
And now some see the rapture of the church here because he swings his sickle across the earth and the earth is harvested. Mm. So some say, well, this is where the church goes up. And now from here on in, it's tribulation things. I, again, don't see a rapture in this book. I do see this this part of it as an image back to when Jesus said, can't you see the earth is already ripe but white under harvest? And this is the whole idea that the earth is ready. People are ready to come unto him, right? Now, the next part is, for me, it's straight up talking about a war that's coming.
Mm.
And it's this that almost makes me want to push the writing of Revelation back to about 55 or 60. Remember, there are those that saw it during Nero's reign?
Right.
And I almost want to do it there, but I won't do that because I'm still pretty convinced. I'm not convinced, but I'd still like to say that it was, you know, in around 85, 90, Domitian's reign and all that. But here the angel comes from the altar, right? And he has a loud voice and he says to the one with the sickle, put your sickle into the earth. So this almost takes us back again to chapter 6. How long, O Lord, until you avenge us? And he already has done that in chapter 9 with the trumpets. But he almost does it here again, and he puts his sickle into the earth, and he swings this sickle, and the earth is harvested in the winepress of the wrath of God. Right? And this winepress of the wrath of God, everybody that's a futurist sees this as part of the tribulation, you know, the devastation that comes upon the earth.
Yep.
And that works really well. But it's also, it says, the winepress is trodden outside the city and the blood flowed as high as the horse's bridles for 1600 stadia. And if you want to be literal with the book of Revelation, this will give you trouble. Because do you know how far 1600 stadia is?
It says right here for 184 miles.
Yeah. And do you know how do you know what is 180 miles?
No.
I do. Well, thank you, Larry.
Yeah.
That's the length of Palestine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good tie-in.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in a sense, what he's saying is, you know, a horse's bridle. Now the horses vary in size. You know, but the average bridle, let's just say it's between 4 and 5 feet off the ground.
Okay.
Let's be generous, say 3.5 to 5 feet off the ground, right? So okay. What he's saying is, he says, the blood from this battle is going to flow 5 feet for 180 miles. So then you can't be literal, can you? Like, no. You just can't do it. I mean, you'd have to slit everybody's throat in a culvert. to get that kind of blood, right?
To get
the blood to flow like that. And I know that Walvoord, he's a literalist, but he's a good scholar, and he'll say, you know what, I think he's saying that the blood's going to spatter to the horse's bridles. It's actually not going to flow, but it's going to spatter. But he still gets it, that he's talking about an incredible time of bloodshed.
Yeah.
And I think he's talking about an incredible time of bloodshed in Palestine. And that's why I almost want to put it to AD 60, into the 60s, so that you can have the fall of Jerusalem. You know, the critical moment in Christian history, well, the critical moment is the death of Christ, the birth and the death of Christ, right? Yeah. And then the ascension. But after that, the critical moment in New Testament history is AD 69, 70. It's the fall of Jerusalem. Yeah. It's the point where you know, Vespasian goes back, Titus destroys Jerusalem. The Pharisees make a pact with Rome. Everything changes at AD 70.
Right.
And there was an incredible bloodshed during that period. But he could still be talking about the future because, you know, 132, you have the Bar Kokhba revolt.
Okay.
That's what, if you've ever gone to Israel, that's the Masada thing, where the Jewish people were holed up on the top of the hill and Rome surrounded it. And eventually they all commit suicide before the Romans get to them. But, and, you know, treated as great heroes for that, by the way, not as cowards or anything. And you can go to Israel today and you can climb that hill, or if you're old like us, they drive you to the top and you can walk back down. it's a big climb. But there was an incredible bloodshed there. Or you could even, if you're a futurist, you can even see this as the battle. Like 48 they took over, but there was also quite a battle in
67 or 72 or
yeah. So there have always been these battles in Palestine that you could point to, or you could say there's going to be a future battle of Palestine.
Yeah.
But what John is saying for sure is, hang on, Christians.
Yeah.
You might lose your life, but when God starts to punish, there's going to be some incredible bloodshed in Palestine.
Yeah.
And then he's going to have to say, of course, before that, he had to say, you know, you are a good God. Like, you are great and you are powerful. And as Christians, we got to be so careful that we don't let go of that.
Right.
In the face of these horrendous things.
Yep.
When people say to us, how can a good God allow that? Mm. And we have to say, we serve him.
Yeah.
He's just and he's good and we serve him.
Yeah, and he is on the throne.
He's on the throne. And we go right back to C.S. Lewis when they talk about Aslan the lion, and they say, is he safe? And he says, no, but he is good.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great way to conclude that piece, Lair. Because you would look at it and say, what bloodshed, but God is God. So. And our good friend Paul would say God is God and we are not, right? You know, he says it all the time. So
yes, he says other things that
aren't as helpful. Actually, that aren't. Huh. Well, we worked him into an episode, and he'll never listen to it, so it doesn't really matter.
It may not matter, and if he did, he wouldn't understand it anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
He's vineyard after all.
Yeah, we'd have to.
Speak. Oh, and I said that out loud too.
Yeah, we'd have to speak slower then. and I can't even take it out and edit in post. But folks, honestly, thanks so much for joining us on this, Larry. That was a great summation of what God's trying to get along with here, is that he's still on his throne, but there's a time of unbelievable judgment coming. And he's still calling people in the midst of all this. He's still calling out to them, please, please come to me. And they still won't. They still won't. Folks, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back again with another episode soon. We're going to talk about, get this, I know, it's a shocker, Revelation 15. A little bit of a surprise to Larry and I. We were kind of wondering, oh, Revelation 15 comes after 14. Here we are. But we look forward to you joining us again. Thanks so much for being with us. We sure appreciate your time. And we'll see you soon.